We now continue on Chof Hei Omid Beis. However, again, as I said, the Mishnah said over there that Mu'uberes Chavero, which we explain as a woman who is pregnant by another man. Obviously, hopefully, it was her husband, okay? But at any rate, she is a pregnant woman. And this guy went and he married her, which he had no business doing, as we explained, and we'll re-explain it again, all right? Or Umeinekes Chavero. In other words, she has a child, she's already had a child by, you know, another man, and she's nursing this child, okay? So, this guy went and he married her in spite of the fact of what? That he's not supposed to marry her until either, you know, the child has been born. I wouldn't even say either or. I mean, the child has to be born and the child has to be weaned before he's allowed to marry her. Why? So first of all, in order to make sure that we understand what is the paternity. But secondly, as I explained, one of the other reasons is that if he marries her, in spite of the fact that Chachomim say that she should not be married to him. I mean, remember, this is an edict of the Rabbanan. It's not a law that we find in the Torah, obviously, but, you know, the rabbis, they had their own enactments in order to give protection. In this case, what is the protection? Protection is actually for the sake of the child, because they were afraid that if she got married before the time that the child was weaned, then her pregnancy would automatically cause the milk to stop. And when that would happen, then the child that she was now nursing would not have a source of nourishment, you see. So that was the basic reason why they said that. Okay, so as I mentioned, therefore there is a rabbinic enactment that a man should not marry a woman in this particular case if she is, of course, you know, from another man. That's what we mean by Mu'uberes Chavero or Meinekes Chavero. Yes. Okay. Let me again explain. A woman, she could be, let's say, divorced, or maybe she's widowed, or something like that. Okay? She's pregnant. So, you have to permit a certain amount of time to pass before you could marry such a woman. First of all, because of the fact that we want to be sure about establishing paternity. Okay? Then in that case, according to this particular edict, right, you cannot marry her. You have to wait until such a time that she has given birth. And if she's nursing, and of course that is the second proviso, she could already have started nursing even beforehand, I mean, whatever it may be, but the point is, because of fear that it would cut off the milk supply to the infant if she were married and became pregnant, so that's why he has to wait a reasonable amount of time before he's permitted to marry her. Okay. No. I don't know who observes it today, I'll be honest with you. I'm not sure that anybody observes it today, but yeah. No, we're not talking about that. Okay, good. I mean, you ask a very logical question, okay. But we're talking about Chavero, okay? Yeah. All right, in other words, another man. In case of it's another man, at least we have, you know, we can see if she's pregnant, or we can see that she's nursing, so that therefore we say, you want to marry her? Gone's fine, but wait until such a time that you can do it, okay? And wait until the time that the child has been weaned before you go ahead and marry her. Well, but that's it. That's the basic question.
She married another man with the child.
Yeah, but they were concerned about the fact that if she becomes pregnant, with the new man, then in that particular case, it would cause the milk supply to to be diminished. Okay. Yeah, 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 absolutely. I don't deny that. Yeah. But the point, you may say it's the same issue, but look, there's a difference between another man's offspring as compared to your own.
Why?
Okay.
If you think the concern
yeah.
is the welfare of the child,
yeah,
that we don't care who's running the risk of impregnating her as well
right.
as lawfully married. So...
This is why I gave the proviso. I said, I don't know who enforces it today, okay? But nevertheless, in the days of, you know, the days of Achachomim, 2,000 years ago, or whatever, 1,500 years ago, this was a concern on their part. I mean, today also, I mean, you know, you can give a child formula and things like that, you understand? So that it's not quite the same problem. Yes.
Do they have the same concern?
Yes.
Or...
Yeah. No, no. That, well, yes and no. I mean, obviously, because they want to feel, you know, that a husband and wife should live together as husband and wife. That's the reason why. And what's going to happen will happen in that case itself. Yes. Yeah. Well, I can understand the logic. I don't necessarily agree with what's going on, but I'm explaining to you, I mean, what is the feeling over here, okay? Why did they say what they say, okay? Yeah.
If they saw some other risk
right.
to help the child.
Yes. Right.
Not the one who just
yeah. yeah.
But another one, then I can see something.
Yeah.
If there's some greater risk. See, right now, there's no rationale on the table that makes us feel there's any greater risk in one situation than the other.
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah,
I mean,
maybe there's
yes.
something else going on here.
Well, this I don't know. This is the only reason, really, that was actually ever given. I mean, so that we could see. I mean, that in the case of a husband and a wife, obviously, they're going to live a normal life, and normal life means that, you know, they're going to be in love and make love and have children and so on. I mean, this is what happens. But where it's somebody else's, then in that case, as I said, first of all, to make sure who is the father of the child. That's the reason why it is, you know, Muberes Chavero, right? And in the case of Anekes Chavero, because they feel that it's not fair to the child to, you know, to have his mother become pregnant and his nourishment supply is going to be diminished. I mean, this is the argument is the reason that they give for it, okay? And then I repeat, I mean, I don't know these days how many people actually enforce this. I really don't know. The closest thing that we have to it right now is in the case of, let's say, if a woman gets divorced, right? So in that case, you tell her at the time that you give her the get that, you know, she's free to marry any man except a Kohen, and except also that she's not allowed to marry a non-Kohen for 90 days afterwards, because the feeling is in 90 days, in case she is pregnant, it would be determined so that we would know, you know, that it's by you know, the her husband, you know, who divorced her, and not by a new prospective husband. Okay, so for that, I mean, we can logically see a reason for that. They didn't have DNA in those days, so this at least was one attempt made in order to try to establish paternity. Okay? All right. So at any rate, according to the Mishnah, if you remember, this was the what did Rabbi Meir said? Rabbi Meir said that lo shosos v'lo notlos kesuva. Let's say she had been accused by this husband who married her in spite of the fact that he should not have married her, you know, because of this particular period. This was a period in which he should not have married her as yet, okay? And during this time, he gave her the warning, you know, that he noticed that he felt that she was guilty of misconduct, and so you know, he gave her official warning, and then she secluded herself, etc., etc., in spite of the warning, right? Then in that case, according to Rabbi Meir, what happened? That particular case, he says, lo shosos, lo notlas kesuva, right? They did not bring the mayim hamo'orim, but at the same time, nor can they collect the kesuva. The chachomim omrim, the sages say, we have a way out. What is the way out? Yochel hu lahafrisho ulahachazira liyachazma. What he can do is to separate himself from her and then to marry her with everybody's blessings after the time has passed. So, in other words, what? So that if she again had defied him during that period, then we'll see, I mean, what would happen. Okay? So now we go back to the text. Okay, text, as we say, we're on the top of Chof Hei Omid Beis right now, right? We have to go back to the Mishnah again, because at the moment they're not talking specifically about that, but they're talking about, because it says then they gave another group of people again. One is the Ilonis, another one is the Skeno, and then the Sheino Ruyolele. Okay. And in all of those cases, we learned that it's Loitlis Kesuba Veloishesis. So the question is, what is, first of all, the Ilonis? So I explained a couple of weeks ago, the Ilonis is a woman who does not have the normal characteristics that we find in the development of a woman. Okay, she's immature, whatever it may be. So because of her physical immaturity, we assume that she's incapable of having a child. Okay, so, and how about Izakena? Skena is a woman already who is old and who presumably is no longer of childbearing age, right? And Sheina Ruya Lele, this is a woman who probably has some sort of a physical impairment which does not enable her to conceive, whatever it may be. As they'll explain it in the commentaries, that she has a maka. Now, what is a maka? Maka means, you know, let's say there's something wrong with her uterus or something or other like that. But, you know, she has periods and things like that, and, you know, she, theoretically, she should be able to have a child, okay? But for some reason or other, she didn't have it. All right. So, again, the question is, what if they had a husband, right? And he gave a warning and so on and so forth, okay? So, in that particular case, again, the same principle applied, that what? Leishoseis, they do not drink the mayim hamo'orim, right? And leilotlis kesuba, nor do they collect the kesuba. However, this is what the text now is going to talk about. Omer Rav Nachman, the second line over there, on Chof Hei Omid Beis. Says Omar Rachmachlach. Woman said, Omar Rabba Abuha. The Rabba Abuha said, Machloikis Bahakoro Uzakena. Avol Ayelonis Divrei Hakol Lo Shoisov Lo Notelis Ksubosov. So that there is a machlokes between Rabbi Meir and the Chachomim and so on and so forth, in reference to what? In reference to the Akora. The Akora, as we said before, this is the woman who is barren, but she has all the proper characteristics, you know, that a woman has, just that whatever it is. Atzikimach, I mean, that she was unable to conceive and bear a child. Zekena, you know, it's a woman who's old. So there's a machloikis as to about what is the procedure about whether, you know, are they required to drink the mayim hamaorerim if they are accused by the husband of having misbehaved, and so they want to prove their innocence, correct? Whereas in the case of the Ilonis, the woman who physical immaturity is such that, you know, she cannot bear a child, so Divrei HaKol, everybody's in agreement that that she does not drink the Maimorim, nor does she collect her ksuba. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, v'nikso v'nizru'o zorah. If you remember, it says in the chapter in the Torah where they speak about the Soto, that if she is proven innocent, that's v'nikso, right? She is nikio, she is proven innocent. Then in that particular case, v'nizru'o zorah, she is going to bear a child afterwards. Okay, so guns fight. So, Misha Darkula Hazriya, to whom can we apply the statement, the Nixov Nizwazora? We can apply it to the woman who is capable of bearing a child. Yotzu, so this case, in the case of the Ilonis, she cannot be included in that category, she'ain dark or hazriya, because she does not have any normal periods or anything like that, and you know, she doesn't have you know what, a woman who is potentially capable of bearing a child should have. Okay, let's take a look for a moment at the Rosh. You can see the Tosfos goes into much greater discussion about all these different things as compared to Rashi. Rashi is very brief over here. Okay. So, first of all, says Machloikis. The Folig Rabbi Eliezer Yemai Yochel Nisoa Cheres. Okay. Says Bakoras Kena. The argument is about Nakoras Kena. Why? The Lekala Meymar, because we cannot say Eino Shoso, that she doesn't drink to my mamorim, right? Elotamo mishum delo chaz yulekaimo alon. But the argument is really based upon a different proposition. And what is the proposition? That if a man, adding already to what Rashi has to say over here, but if a man marries an older woman, and he has not fulfilled yet the mitzvah of having children, then in that case he's marrying a woman with whom he cannot fulfill the mitzvah, so that he should not marry an older woman. That's his kena. Okay? And likewise, he should not marry an akora, a woman who has had a record of, let's say, being married previously but never having any children, if he is young and capable of having children. Now, if, however, it's not again in the Rashi, but it's understood, I mean, from the commentaries, if, however, he has already fulfilled the mitzvah, a period of the Rivya, in other words, he was married and he had children, then in that particular case, this doesn't apply because of the fact that, you know, once you've established the minimum number of children that you should have, then if you want to marry an older woman, okay, you have done your part. You understand? So in that particular case, the children said, Chazir the Karma, as he says, she should not be living together with him, because he should not have married her in that case, as long as he still hasn't fulfilled this mitzvah. So Polig Rabbi Elazar, however, disagrees with this statement, and he says, V'yomar, why should he divorce her? On the contrary, he has an easy way out. What? The Yochel Lisa Yishar Cheres. Those days, technically, polygamy was permitted, right? So in that case, if he wants to be married to an older woman or to a woman that hasn't given birth, Gesundheit, but let him marry at the same time a younger woman who is capable of giving him children. So this is Rabbi Elazar's opinion over there. Not very practical for today's society. But you can recognize the fact, that the idea of being able to fulfill a mitzvah, getting married and having children, is a very, very important concept in Yiddishkeit. There's no question about it. And this is why, the whole idea of family, is very important to us. So that's why, if there are reasons that a person should be prevented from marrying because of the fact that it's a known impossibility at this point that he cannot have children with the woman, then in that case, that's it. All right, but at any rate, it comes back again to the the problem. So what? So the answer is, so in such a case, we would expect that she should drink the Mayim HaMa'orim if she's accused of everything, right? And prove, the fact that she's innocent, okay? Otherwise, Leinot L'Ksuba, they don't collect. But with the Ilonis, we said, the woman who is so physically immature that she cannot have a child, so in that particular case, she can, it's Loi Shaisa, the Loi, okay. Abolai alone, says Rashi, he Name, inasmuch also he says, the Uya Lekaima, right, that he can stay married to her, Mihu, nevertheless, he says, Lo Shati, she does not drink the Maimorim. Why? Mehai Tamo, for the reason, as we said, the Uya Lehebra Unbeinam. In order to fulfill this business where it says Phoenix of Nizwa Zora, we have to have a woman who is capable of having children. Va'akora Adyade Makor, and in the case of a woman who is barren because there's something wrong with her internal organs, right? Or Uzakeno, a woman who is old, so Mino de Basheron he kodem lachen, inasmuch as she was capable of having a child prior to this, because she's normal, in other respects, right? So lachen, right? So avol ayalonis bin beten imalukuya, but the ayalonis, right from the very birth, she no longer was capable of having a child. She had, this fault, the lochazia, and she obviously, is not fit for that. So as we can see, again, even though they're lumped together in the Mishnah, but nevertheless there is an essential difference between them. Okay. Then the Mishnah continued, and it said. Meisvei, yes. So we asked the Kasha on this, okay? We asked the following question. It's the third line from the bottom of the text. Hamakane larusasai, okay? L'shameres yovem shalom. All right. A person is, as we said already, he is betrothed, right? She is betrothed to him, even though they have not yet, what? Begun to live together as husband and wife. But nevertheless, we know that in the moment that he gives her Erusin, that he says Harayat Mekudeshesli, and he gives her, that he gives her Ksuba and everything else, then in that particular case, she is his wife, except for the fact that they have not yet begun to live together as husband and wife. That has to take place only after Nisuin. Okay? So, and who is the Shomeris Yovam? She, as we explained, this is the woman. Her husband has died. She is childless, but he has a brother. So, as we know, then automatically her husband's brother is supposed to marry her, right? Unless we have the business of Chalitza. Well, in any case, in both of these cases, we're talking im acheloi konso, right? They have not yet begun to live together as husband and wife, even though officially, you know, the Shomeris Yovam actually belongs already to him. But nothing was done yet. He did not yet, you know, live together with her, in which case, you know, he's not done anything. Or, in the case of the Arusa, even though she is betrothed to him, they have not yet established a home together and gone to live together. Okay? So, and so, Nistarah, if he gave a warning and she was secluded, etc., etc., then in that case, Lai Shaisa, Velona Teles Kishidosa. She does not drink to my Maorim, nor does she collect Eksuba. Why doesn't she drink the Maya Maorim? Since we learned before, because they touch. Beginning to talk to Shemesh tonight. They take a text where it says Tachas Isha. Okay? So they say Tachas Isha, literally under her husband, which means that they actually have to be living together already as husband and wife. And if they have not yet fulfilled that Tachas Isha, you know, this. These are words that are there in the Parsha of the Sota, you see. Over there it says, you know, if she has committed adultery, tachas isha, right? She's committed adultery literally under her husband. In other words, she's committed adultery against her husband. If we were to take the translation, you know, the literal meaning of it, that's what it means. But, you know, for a drash, you don't always take a literal meaning. You take you give a different twist of the interpretation, right? So the twist of the interpretation, as we saw before, is that they have to be living together, actually, as husband and wife, before he could go through the business of taking her to Yerushalayim, if he has given a warning. But if he has given a warning otherwise, and they have not yet lived together as husband and wife, then what? Then in that particular case, obviously, he's not going to take her to Yerushalayim. But by the same token, because her conduct is such that it is open to grave doubts as to whether she's been conducting herself properly, so in that case, she loses the ksuba. Okay? This is what we said. Huh? Is she in the status of a gerusha? Actually. No, you're right. Right. Because that's the idea. The minute that she... why is she losing Tzuba? Because he's divorcing her. He has to, you know, he hasn't been able, he has his grave suspicions, he can't live with her anymore, because we said before, on the previous side of the page, if you remember, that, you know, she is prohibited to him olamis, forever. Why is she? Because as long as they didn't resolve the issue as to whether, you know, she's guilty or innocent, then in that particular case he cannot live with her anymore as husband and wife. So that's what does he have to do? So he has to divorce her. Okay? And but he divorces her and she does not collect the ksuba. This is the difference. Okay. Mu'beres chavero, meinekes chavero lo shoses lo notles kesubo, divin Rabbi Meir, right? This is what we said before. that, you know, if she's pregnant by another man or if she's nursing the child that she bore to another man, so lo shoses, well, that's kesubah. Then they don't drink the mayim avorim if they're accused and they seclude themselves, etc., etc. Nor can they collect the kesubah. Divrei Rabbi Meir. These are the words of Rabbi Meir. Shehoya Rabbi Meir Omer, because Rabbi Meir said, Lo yiso odonu beres chaveru minekes chaveru. Right? He said a man should not marry a woman who is at this moment pregnant by another man, or who is nursing the child of another man. Right? The yim noso, and if he went and he married her, nevertheless, then yotzi velo yachzi velomis. He has to divorce her, and he cannot ever remarry her at all. This is Rabbi Meir. He's being very strict over here. Why? Because obviously he, you know, the person who married, he disobeyed an edict of the rabbis. The Chachomim Oimrim, but the Chachomim say it's not quite as drastic. What do they say? They say Yotzi. He has to divorce her, but Sheyagia Zman Lichnos Yichnos. Okay, but when the time comes, in other words, the period of, let's say, nursing has passed or something like that, then in that particular case, then he can remarry her. Okay? This is actually a law on the books. As I said, again, I don't know how many people are actually enforcing this law today. I don't know, for example, if, well, let's say a couple comes to a rabbi to say that we want to get married, whether we ask them this question, are you pregnant by another man or something like that, you understand? I don't know that. Not even sure if he asks these days whether you're nursing a child of another man. First of all, in those days, it was customary to nurse a child, let's say, for a period of about 2 years. Okay? Today, I don't know how long the period of nursing is. We know, I mean, if it's a year, it's a lot. In most cases, the weaning period starts when? About 6 months, 9 months, or something like that, right? So if that's the case, then it certainly wouldn't have to wait 2 years, no question about it. So even if we wanted to enforce this law, but the waiting period certainly is a lot shorter. And what if a woman doesn't nurse at all, but instead she, you know, she gives the baby a bottle or something like that? So that didn't enter into the argument in those days, obviously, because women didn't do that. Either a woman was capable of nursing, or else what was the other possibility? You gave it to a woman, you know, who could nurse. But those were the only two possibilities open. All I can say is, obviously, in a society where you lived in a small shtetl or something like that, where everybody knew what was going on, who was alive and who died, and you know, and so that people would know each other. So in that particular case, a Beis Din could certainly enforce things a lot more easily. We're living in a civilization where we don't know anybody over here. I mean, in the final analysis, distances are great and things like that. So that's why I say I doubt if any rabbi today ask these questions of a prospective couple. I doubt it. Ask other questions. Have you been married before? Yeah, that's legitimate, because you want to find out if, you know, if either party was married before, did they have a get, and so on, you see. So that's a legitimate concern. I would also say in this category, too, I don't want to minimize the decree of the rabbis, because the Rabbanan is also a very important concept, okay? But in the case of a woman who marries without having a get, that's already a more serious infraction of the law, because that already goes into the business of being an erva. You know, a prohibited marriage that the Torah itself prohibits. So that that being the case, it's obviously a much more serious matter than in this particular case. All right. But at any rate, we want to understand what's going on with the reasoning over here, what's happening over there, okay? The Harova. What's a rova? This is spelled with an aleph, not with a hey. So the answer is, a rova is a young man, okay? Shenosa akora. The reason why it's a young man is because it's based on the Aramaic ravya. Ravya means a child. So in other words, means that here's a young fellow, he's hardly out of childhood, right? Shenosa akora, uzakeno, right? He married a woman who has a record already as being barren, because how do we know that she's barren? Obviously she had been married before, and she never had a child, so that would establish the idea that she's an akara. Or iskena, that we can tell. I mean, we can tell by years, how old she is, okay? The ein lo isha uvonin the akara, right? And he does not have a wife and children to begin with, which means what? Which means that he was able, let's say, to be married to somebody else and have children already, so that he no longer has the problem, of fulfilling the mitzvah of be fruitful and multiply, right? Then in that case, lo sheisov v'lo noteles kesuba, if he accuses her of having committed adultery under the circumstances we said, and so on and so forth, then in that particular case, she still doesn't take the Mayim HaMo'or, nor does she collect the Ksuba either. Rabbi Elozer Omer, Rabbi Elozer says, Yochel Hu Lisa Cheres, V'lifel Tzivotimani. He says, you don't have to prohibit him from marrying either the Zkeno or the Akora, because he could marry another woman and have a child, with a different woman. Avol hamakani larusisosoi lushameris yovim shelo, right? But if he accuses his betrothed, again, not the woman, he hasn't yet lived with her, right, as husband and wife, or the Shomeris Yovon, in other words, he is tied to this woman who is the widow of his brother, right? Even though he has not yet married her, right? Moshe Konso, but finally they do begin to live together as husband and wife, and then Nistero, and she then, after they're living together as husband and wife, and then he doesn't like her conduct, and he says, don't seclude yourself with so on and so forth, and then she goes and she defies him and she secludes herself with the person against whom he warned her, and so on and so forth, then in that case it's lo notelis kesuba. Then in that case, either she has to drink the Mayim HaMo'orim like any other married woman, right? Or she does not collect her ksuba. Okay, we'll stop at this particular point tonight, and we shall continue next week. Yitzhak Hashem, same time, same space, and so on and so forth. Yes. Pardon me? It's not any different. Sometimes, they like to sum up. We said case A, case B, and so on. But once they live together as husband and wife, in other words, we said, until they live together as husband and wife, then they don't drink, nor do they collect suba. But once they do live together as husband and wife, then in that particular case, either she establishes her innocence through drinking the mayamum over him, or he divorces her and she doesn't collect it. So it's one or the other. Okay? All right. Okay, tonight is the 11th of February, if I'm not mistaken. And we are on Chaf Aleph, Chaf Vav Amud Aleph. And we will continue from where we left off last week. Because some of you have not been, not here last week, so let me just sum up a couple of minutes what the current discussion is about. So we'll have a picture and we'll understand what's going on. Good evening, Gerv. It's good to see you. Yeah. So we've had lists of different situations where the general theme is that if she's actually a married woman, then in that case she has to go through with what? With the ritual of drinking the mayamam orarim, unless, and then we had some exceptions. As for example, the husband said, I don't want you to do it anymore, so in that case, right? Or if the husband, let's say, decided that he wanted to have intercourse with her, even on the road to Yerushalayim, so in that case, that's the end of the maisa too, and things like that. We also had the case where, let's say, if the woman says, Eini shosa, right? I won't drink it, even though she may be innocent, but she just doesn't want to go through with the whole deal, then in that particular case, it's possible to stop the process at that point. And of course, what happened, she was lo shosa, right? She would not then drink the mayamorim, but at the same time, of course, Lodo tell us to subosa. She doesn't get her kesubah either, In other words, she's divorced by the husband, but she cannot collect the kesubah. So that's also a possible case, okay?
Yes, she
did. Yes.
Can she remarry the husband?
No. Because this we already learned, that the minute that, that they go through this business, then he cannot take her back at all.
Oilomis.
Yeah, but even so, the point is he has to divorce her. Because that goes hand in hand. Now, ordinarily, if a man divorces his wife, it is possible to take her back again in marriage. Right, correct. I mean, there are also the, you're absolutely right. I mean, this proviso that she should not have married somebody in between. But I'm talking, that, where she did not remarry, and he decided that they wanted to remarry, then in that case it's permissible. But it's prohibited in a couple of cases. Case number one is this one, right? Right. It's prohibited, of course, in this case where he said that he cannot take it back at all or miss forever, right? Mm-hmm. And the other case, of course, would be about a kohen. A kohen is not allowed to marry a woman who is a divorcee, even if it's his own divorcee, you understand? So in that case, so that's it. I mean, once he divorces her, he cannot marry her anymore. So those are some of the cases. Now, we're going through a list of other possibilities where question is now, should she drink the Mayim HaMa'orim in view of the fact that there are some peculiar circumstances regarding her marriage? All right. We had said previously, all right, we're on Chav Vav Amud Aleph, we're about the 12th line of the, from the top, okay? We had said previously, we had learned that if a woman who is pregnant from another man, right? Then in that case, what did we say? We say that in this particular case, right? She can't collect the ksuba, but at the same time, she doesn't make the mayim hamorim. Okay. Same thing would be Menekes chaveiro. In other words, she had given birth to a child by another man, and she was nursing this child. And I explained that for 2 years she's not supposed to marry. Of course, we had a big discussion about this last week that those of you who were absent unfortunately missed, because we were challenging this proposition from every direction. My own feeling at the time that I explained was that today things would be a little bit different because of the fact that whereas in those days when a child was born, he required nursing for 2 years, and therefore they decided that they did not want to disturb the nursing process, and that's the reason why they did not permit him to marry until 2 years had passed, by which time the child was weaned. So that particular case, you know, today I don't think that people are very, as we would say, machpid about it. In other words, they don't. I'm not aware that rabbis are now asking those questions. They do say that in case of a divorced woman, you know, at the time they get, they'll tell her, you know, that you're not allowed to marry for 3 months after this event, because we want to make sure, you know, it's a way of making sure that she's not pregnant from this union, that, you know, she's just dissolving, so that another man would be aware of that fact, you know, that she's pregnant. And, of course, she's also told she's not allowed to marry a Kohen, being a divorcee. Okay? So, these are the things. But to wait 2 years, the way the rabbi said, you know, before she could remarry, or as we had previously another case where they said that, well, he didn't have to divorce her necessarily, but he couldn't live with her anyway for 2 years, and only afterwards he could decide to take her back again. This was in the case where she had been, as I said, pregnant by another man, or nursing a child by another man. Of course, nursing a child by another man doesn't mean necessarily, you know, that he would have to wait 2 years from that particular date. It's possible that she was already nursing, let's say, for a year. Then in that case, once the 2 years had passed, you know, that, you know, he could marry her. But now we come to the following situation. Question is, now, Me'uberes u'meinekes atzmo. What if she is pregnant by her own husband, or she is nursing a child by him? So what is the case now? So we say, Oshoso, Olonotels Ksubosa. In that particular case, we say, look, you're married to this man, and therefore you're like all other married women. The fact that you're pregnant, or the fact that, the fact that you're pregnant, right, or the fact that you're nursing is not going to affect the fact that if you had behaved in such a manner, you know, that your husband had to warn you against secluding yourself with another man, and then you went and you defied him and you did precisely that, so that doesn't mean that because the other case we said is loy shoysa below lotelis kutubosa, that this applies to you. In your particular case, you know what? It's o shoysa or lo lotelis kutubosa. Either you drink the Mayim HaMarorim in order to prove your innocence, or else you don't collect your ksuba. This, of course, you know, it's like any other married woman, as we said. Okay.
Pregnant.
Yes.
She's pregnant.
She's pregnant by him. Right.
Going through
the Okay.
That
so. Okay. Very good. You ask a very good question. Okay. You ask a very, very good question. Right. 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 Okay. Very good. You asked a very good question. Okay. Yeah. Take a look at the Rashi line 4. Okay? From the top of the page.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can stop at line 3 over there. Mm-hmm. Okay? Mu'uberes atzmo, right? It says, Shehoi Yisoy Yishto Mu'uberes, right? His wife was pregnant. The Kinei Lo, and then he gave her this warning and everything else and so on and so forth. So what did we say? We say, Oishoiso, right? In other words, either they have to drink the Mayim HaMorim, or they don't collect, right? And Rashi adds, V'lo Amrinan, lo lik t'lei levod. And we don't say, let's not kill the child. In other words, the mamorim is not going to affect the embryo that she's carrying. This is what Rashi is saying. Okay? All right.
I don't know what that means.
In other words, she should, if she wants to prove her innocence, right, if she wants to prove her innocence, then she has to drink the Mayim HaMorim. This is what Rashi
says. Even though that she's pregnant.
Right.
And go through the whole business with the,
right,
with the,
right.
With the tearing of it.
Right, right, yeah. So we said before, you know, she could go into a state where, you know, she gets sicker and sicker and sicker and so on. But at any rate, if she's a married woman, then she's expected to. Irv, did you turn it over?
I turned it over.
Okay, good. So I remember whether we had used side B. Okay, all right. So, another case. Horove shenosa akoro uzakena. Okay, rova is a funny word, but it comes from, it's related to an Aramaic word. The Aramaic word is ravia. Ravia means child. In other words, we're talking about a very young man, young stud, okay? Okay, shenosa akoro uzkena. He marries who? Either a woman who is barren, or she's an older woman. In either case, she is incapable. Right, she is incapable of having a child. Right, and of course we said before that in general, a young man should not marry a woman who cannot bear him a child, because it's a mitzvah to get married and to have children. Right, if you know that a woman is such that she can't do it, then in that case you shouldn't be married. However. Inasmuch as what? Inasmuch as in those days bigamy was permitted, or polygamy, whatever
polygamy.
You want to say, polygamy, right? Okay, polygamy, that's the better word, okay? Polygamy was permitted, okay? Then we say, v'yeshlo isho vonim, but let's say he has another wife from whom he has children, right? Then in that case, oishoiso, then in that particular case, this woman, the old woman or the barren woman, is like any other wife in that, either she's going to drink the Bayim HaMorim or else she doesn't collect the ksuba.
The fact that he has another wife and children, it enters into
the fact that he's not then required to divorce the old woman or the akara. Whereas otherwise we would say he shouldn't marry, and if he marries he should really divorce them because he cannot fulfill the mitzvah of having children. Yeah, that's the idea.
Well, it depends on the age of the man. You said a young man.
Yeah. Because, okay, an older man who already has children, if he decides that he wants to marry or something like that, that would be permitted.
But suppose he doesn't have any.
Suppose he doesn't have children. Then in that particular case, they would probably recommend take a woman who's younger and try to make children. There's no question about that. There's a pasuk in the book of Kohelis which says, "Baboker's raz harecha, or the erev al tanach yodecha." Of course, the real shot of that is in the morning, cast your seed, and even in the evening, don't slacken your hand. In other words, continue working and so on, because, hopefully what you do, you'll be able to get produce, things growing as a result of your efforts. Okay. But naturally, our sages come along and they take this verse and they apply it to different things. Okay. One application is that if you studied Torah or if you had Talmidim while you were young, don't slacken when you get old. You still have to continue to learn Torah and so on. fits in very well, of course, with our idea that if you want to stay young mentally, right, continue to study Torah. Just coming together over here is an excellent exercise. But there's another interpretation. In other words, Babokas Raza Racha, that if you had children in your youth, so Lerval Parakadecho, keep trying even when you get older too. So that's an answer to your question. Okay. So for an older man, I mean, the fact that he marries on the Koran, so, but nevertheless, if he still is virile enough, I mean, that he could have children, then we don't want to discourage him from doing that. But with a young man, we feel you have so many possibilities ahead of you. Why marry a woman that already has been proven that, you know, she cannot have children?
Isn't that grounds for divorce? Why would he marry somebody who's grounds for divorce?
Okay. Grounds for divorce. The problem with, you know, technically, for example, if a man and woman live together for 10 years and he feels, I mean, he sees that they have no children and he feels that he could do better by marrying someone else, and he's permitted to divorce his wife for this particular reason and then go and marry another woman with whom he could have it. But then they come, and you know, you have all kinds of stories about the fact that even though permission was there, but people did not want to take permission to take advantage of it because they love their wife.
And
some have children after the 10th year. That's absolutely right. Whatever in Springfield. I mean, I know personally, people go to fertility clinics and things like that, right? And an attempt to have children, and then
Roman Abramson had no children after 10 years. And his father-in-law told the wife, told him, and he said, no one in the devil's throat seemed to have
children.
It was never a requirement.
No. Her father was married 10 years and had no children.
Okay, all right, whatever. No, that's not the kind of thing that they enforced, okay?
It's nothing to enforce.
Permission was there. In other words, it could serve as a grounds for seeking divorce, but it doesn't mean that, therefore, automatically you run to the best inn and you seek it.
Nothing negative.
Right.
Well, they couldn't tell.
Yeah.
In those days, they couldn't tell whether a man was impotent or the woman is incapable.
Yeah, I would say that normally, in most cases, they consider the woman as being the one who is at fault. But of course, we know that exactly from our own experience. We know that. And as a matter of fact, we'll come across a case over here, too, where they feel that actually the man himself is not capable. Right. Okay. All right. So, all right. Now, the next one on the list is Eishes Mamzer LeMamzer. The Eishes Nesim Nesim. Okay. We know that according to the law of the Torah, somebody who is a Yisrael, and here I am including, of course, a Kohen, a Levi, Israel. In other words, someone who is a Yid, you know, with the full status of being a Yid, is not allowed to marry a Mamzer, right? It's not allowed to marry, well, let's put it this way, he's not allowed to marry a Mamzeres, because after all, if he is a Yid, then you shouldn't marry a Mamzeres, okay. If she is a Kosher Yiddish Foy, she should not marry a Mamzer, okay. And of course, now we have to define what is a Mamzer. And of course, we know that the word Mamzer does not mean a child born out of wedlock, but what it does mean is specifically a child which is the product of the Aroyos.
A forbidden marriage.
It could either be because it's the child, the offspring of, you know, a too close relationship, or of course, if a woman is an Eishes Ish, in other words, she's still a married woman and she has a child by another man, then in that case the child is also a Mamzer. Of course, this is a tremendous problem today in this country because, you know, a lot of people, thanks to the reform movement, have gotten civil divorces without ever bothering to get a get. So that technically, the woman in such a case is still an HSH as long as she doesn't have a get. And if she should have a child at this particular point, you know, before she can get a get, then in that case the child would be considered a mamzer. So the law is that, as we say, a person who is a Yisrael or Yisraelis is not allowed to marry a mamzer or mamzer. Okay.
Someone doesn't get a get, and she marries somebody and becomes pregnant, that child is a mamzer?
Right, right. That's unfortunate. This is one of the worst things that we have today.
Right.
One of the worst problems that we have.
Mm-hmm.
Pardon me? First cousins are permitted to be married according to Jewish law. That's permissible, okay? But there are others that are prohibited. I mean, obviously, for example, well, look, that's already a different story. You're talking eugenics, but you're not talking halacha, okay? You understand what I'm saying? There are many states that prohibit it because among many goyish churches, they prohibit it. Okay.
I don't think they can.
Yeah, but I'm saying there are many churches that prohibit it. All right, so because Goyim prohibited it, so many states have also adopted the law prohibiting the marriage of first cousins.
Uh-huh.
But from the point of view of halacha, it's permitted. Massachusetts is a state where it's permitted for first cousins to marry. Okay? That law was never enacted over here in Massachusetts. Yeah. So, as I said, I mean, you know, they say that, for example, if both of them have bad eyesight, so the child is going to be born with bad eyesight. But it seems to me that it isn't necessarily true with just the first cousins. It could happen with others, too. If he has to wear glasses, then she has to wear glasses. So the child, obviously, is going to have the vision, but will also require correction by glasses.
It's more dangerous.
Okay.
The cousins,
yeah.
Keep on marrying cousins down the line. Then,
yeah.
Then
well, okay, I won't deny that. I mean, there
is
a possibility, right? Yes, right, correct.
Said.
I mean, right. This is why they got the hemophilia eventually. Yeah. All right, but at any rate, there are others that are prohibited. I mean, why, for example, according to the law of the Torah, an uncle may marry a niece. In fact, some consider it it's a great supposed to do it. But on the other hand, it's definitely prohibited among the Aroyas for a nephew to marry an aunt. It's prohibited. Now, with many of these things, you know, we can't say that there's rhyme or there's reason. We don't know. I mean, in certain cases, the law of the Torah is such that we simply have to accept it as a matter of faith itself.
If the uncle is her mother's brother?
If the uncle is
her mother's brother.
The mother's brother. Well, usually it's.
She's allowed to marry?
The niece is allowed to marry.
The mother's daughter is allowed to marry?
Right. Yeah. It's permitted. There are arroyos, of course, where it's not necessarily a blood relationship. There's arroyos, for example, on the basis that if A is married to B and C is related to B, then in that particular case it's also possible that A cannot marry C. You understand? You have the whole business over there. Right. So that it's a very, very difficult business, you know, when you go through it, I mean, to study all the different relationships. But all these relationships are referred to as being arroyos, okay? Which is the plural of the word erva, right? Because the word used in the Torah is ervas, achicha, vasimecha, vasavicha, etc., etc. In other words, literally, the nakedness of. Okay, so all right. Now, getting back to our mamzer. Okay, since the poor mamzer cannot marry a Yisrael or Yisraelis, right? Then, in that particular case, what should happen with mamzerim? So the answer is right. They are permitted to marry another mamzer. Okay. so that that way at least they can live a normal life, even though their child in turn, of course, will also be a mamzer. That's all. Okay?
So there's no way out of the mamzer, isn't there? The whole line.
It's very complicated, very technical, very complicated. Right. Very technical. It's very difficult to get out of it. Huh? No, because this the Torah doesn't say, you know, that only up to the 10th generation. When it says 10th generation, that's already followed. Yeah. With the Ammoni and Moabi, you know, these people, or Mitzri, well, right, the Mitzri, for example, right? The Mitzri. With the Mitzri, it says, you know, Doravi, okay, fourth generation. Already, it's all right by then, okay? But it doesn't say that with others, where it says even the Dor Asiri, right? Lo Yovai. In other words, even the 10th generation cannot marry within the fold of Israel, okay? So a mamzer is in that particular category. But in the Gemara in Kedushin, they try to figure out a way whereby eventually the stain of Mamzeres could be erased through marriage, you know, to a Ger and so on, right? It's a very complicated business. Okay. So, all right. So here we have a case, what? Where a Mamzer is married to a Mamzeres, right? Mm-hmm. But as I said, this is a legal marriage because the two of them are permitted by Jewish law to marry each other. Or, another case, Ashes Nisin and Nisin. Who were the Nisinim? So we learned, again, Gomorrah in Kedushin, that the Nisinim, they were the descendants of the Givonim. People of Givonim, they came to... you know, to Yeshua, they didn't want to be annihilated in warfare, so they disguised themselves and said they came from a far country, etc., etc., and they made a peace treaty with Israel. And then, lo and behold, when Israel discovered that it was a fake, but nevertheless, having given their word, you know, that these people would be spared, so their punishment was that they were to be. In other words, that they would do menial tasks or something like that. So again, a Nisin or Nisina cannot marry a Israeli, but they are permitted to marry each other. Okay. And how about the Ashes Ger, the wife of a proselyte, or the wife of an Eved Meshuchrar, a slave who has been given his freedom, right? And finally, the Ayalonis. Now, who is this Ayalonis? So we mentioned that a couple of weeks ago. We spoke about her. The Ayalonis is a woman who, right from the earliest years, does not really display enough feminine characteristics. She's immature physically, including, you know, her genitals are immature, she doesn't have the same breast development and things like that, you know, that a normal woman should have, and so on. And, of course, an Ayalonis is a woman who cannot conceive, because she doesn't have whatever it is, okay? So, in that particular case, what happens if a man happened to marry an Ayalonis? He's not supposed to. But let's say he did it. Torah doesn't say that shall not marry Nihilonis, you understand? So that technically there are certain marriages which are either in against the law of the Torah, such as, for example, if a Kohen marries a divorced woman, okay? Torah prohibits it. Man goes ahead and he says, no, the Torah can prohibit it, but I want to marry so-and-so, even though she's Jewish. Okay? Now, what do you do in such case? Well, according to the law, the Gemara, Besdin has the power to force the man, right, to dissolve the marriage. He should give her a get and father can dissolve it, not live with her. Okay? But, you know, really have, but they didn't these days, that have that kind of authority to do it. So, let's say they have a child. So what is the result of it? So what is the result?
The child is not a
con. Child is definitely not a con. The child is what we call a cholol. Okay?
No.
Not a mamzer. No. No. Because this marriage, even though it's against the law of the Torah, is not included in the list of those prohibited marriages that are based upon, you know, blood relationship, consanguinity, if you want to use a nice fancy word or something like that, okay? When we studied the Gemara Kiddush, and also we had references to it in Marcos, we learned that there are two different categories. One category is Chayve Lavin, and the other one is category Chayve Kores. Okay? Chayve Lavin, that's what I just said. I mean, the Torah says don't, you did it, but nevertheless, we don't say that the marriage is therefore, you know, a marriage that was never a marriage to begin with. We say that it was a marriage, but it should be dissolved and shouldn't, you know, shouldn't be permitted to exist any further, okay? But if they have a child, so the punishment in the case of if it's a kohen who marries the gerusha is the fact that the child is considered a cholol, which means that the child is now disqualified from acting as a kohen. Or if it's a female child, she's a cholola. And of course, a kohen would be prohibited from marrying such a woman. Okay? So that's the punishment that they face. Okay? What about, however, you know, chayve kores and so on, chayve krisis? That's already this, the business of our royos. Because if a person, we say, that marriage was never a marriage to begin with, because it could never at all be considered a marriage according to the law of the Torah. So it's a different category altogether. Okay. So in the case of the Ilonis, for some reason or other, the man went and he married her, even though according to the Chachom, and this now is not a Torah law, but it's, you know, the Rabbonim, they came along and they also made decrees because they wanted to ensure, let's say, that people would live a normal life, marry and have children and so on, and they felt that this was not a normal relationship. But still, if a man went and he married the Nihilonis, then what? So in that case, what is the din? So the din is that if a person is married under any of those categories, we recognize it as being a marriage from the point of view that if she misbehaves, she's warned, she secludes herself and everything else, then in that particular case, the answer is either she has to drink the Maim Hamorim in order to prove her innocence, or else she doesn't collect ksuba. She's divorced and does not collect the ksuba. Okay? Yes. Right.
And she will have a child.
Correct. In the case of Ayalonis, obviously she can't have a child. This is a big problem. Nope. Right, it's a problem.
I have another problem. You got two blind men. You got two blind men.
Yeah. Okay. So now they question the last thing over there about the Ayalonis, right? It says, Katoni Miho Ayalonis, right? It says, look, in this list that we just listed, we said the Ayalonis too, right? And we said to Yufte the Rav Nachman, this is an argument against the position of Rav Nachman. So of course we have to ask, so what was the position of Rav Nachman? So that we have to look at the preceding page over there. The preceding page, take a look at the second line over there, right? It says over there, Omer Rav Nachman, Omer Rav Bar Abuha, right? He says, Machlokes Bakoris Keno. In other words, the Machlokes has to, if the man marries a woman who is barren or who is a Keno, you know, whether you know, we would say that she has to drink or doesn't collect the ksuba, and one different opinion says the other way around. But he says, Abol Ayilonis, right, in the case of Ayilonis, Duri HaKol, according to everybody, Lo Shoisa Velo, the Teles Ksubosa, right? She doesn't drink and she doesn't collect the ksuba. Why? Shenemar, because the Pasuk says, V'nik saw, that if she's proven innocent, right, then Israel Zora, then she will be blessed by having a child. So Misha Darkala Hazriya, that can only apply to someone, in other words, to a woman who actually can have seed. In other words, a woman, you know, she has periods and things like that, and you know that she can do it. But Yotzu Zu, this is an exception. She ain't Darkala Hazriya, because she doesn't have the nature wherein, you know, she's going to be like a woman, okay? So Kasha, he says, lo, right? Lo shosa, belong to Kusubo. And here in this list, we had listed the Ilonis as o shosa, either she drinks, or lo tell us Kusubo. So one says she doesn't, the other one says she does drink the Bayim HaBorim. Okay? So, it's Akasha and Pan Rahman, Rav Nachman.
How can you see Yisra'atah?
Right. So, Amalucha Rav Nachman. So, Rav Nachman gives the following answer. He says, Tanoi, he says, you know what? My argument, what I'm saying, and so on, this is based upon the machlekes of the earlier authorities of Tanoi. The Yano, the Amre, Kehaitano, and as far as I'm concerned, the position that I am stating is in accordance with this Tana, the Tanya, as we have learned, Rab Shimon ben Alozo Emer, he says, Ailonis Loishoisolon Tazubot, he's my authority. He says she doesn't drink the Baimaron and she doesn't collect the Ksuba. Shenemar, and of course he quotes over here again, you know, Benikso and Israel Zora, that if she is proven innocent, then she will have seed. Misha Darkal Azriya, Yotzuzu Shein Darkal Azriya. We saw it on the previous page, which we already read. Okay. The Rabbonon, so, okay, the Rabbonon, what about that? In other words, the authorities who don't accept this interpretation of the Pasuk. Hi, v'nixov nizvazora mayavdele. What do they do with the pasuk v'nixov nizvazora, that if she is innocent she will have a child? So he says, miboy elahu, they needed lichet v'tanya, as we have learned, v'nixov nizvazora, that if she is innocent and she has a child, she'im hoyisa akora nifkedes. That it means that if she was barren until this moment, then in that case, she's going to become pregnant and have a child. Divrei Rabbi Akiva. This is Rabbi Akiva's opinion. So Amar Rabbi Yishmael, who likes to argue with Rabbi Akiva, he said to him, he says, Im Kain, if this is so, then you saw through Kol HaKoreis V'Yipoktu. Then in that case, all the women who were barren are going to put themselves into such a position that they'll act suspiciously, so the husband will take them to the Beis HaMikdash in order to test them, they'll be proven innocent, and lo and behold, it's better than a fertility pill. Right. The zoo, this woman, Hoyel Balon is Torah, Hifsidah. What happens if a woman does not want to go through this business of secluding herself because she's absolutely innocent, she's a woman with a good reputation, she doesn't want to ruin it by this play acting, so to speak, you know? So if see that she loses out, if that's the case. So Im Kain, if that's the case, Ma Talmud Lomar. So if that's the case, then give me another taich, please. Give me another interpretation of the nixov and Israel Zorah. So here they come up with a different explanation. pasuk means she'im ho'yisoyu le'hesbitzahar, if previously when she had given birth she had pain in giving birth, right? So this time she'll give birth and she'll have an easy time of it. Nekevos, let's say she'd only had girls until now, so yeladisacharim, she'll have boys too. Okay, kitzorim, let's say that the children that she's had to date are all shorties, so in that case yeladisarukim, and she'll have the taller kids. Okay, shechorim, let's say that the kids that she's had until now are dark in complexion, so you let us the bottom that she'll have light colored children. Okay, so that's how they interpret it. Okay, then of course they come back again to this business of Aisha's Mamzer Lamamzer, right? The wife of the Mamzer to the Mamzer. Pshita, shouldn't it be obvious that what? That if she went and she secluded herself and her, you know, she find a husband, that what? That it's like any other married woman, we said, that, you know, she either she drinks to buy mamorim or shesa, right? Or lo notelis ksuba, or she doesn't collect a ksuba. Isn't she the same as any married woman? So he says, Mahu the same woman. You might argue as follows. Right, that we don't want to encourage mamzerim and mamzeros to marry each other. Why? Because after all, they are the product of sin, and we don't want to multiply the products of sin. Okay, so kamash walon, therefore we have the statement in order to teach us that nevertheless they are still like other married people, and the same law applies to them. Right, right.
From Judy has to accept them, anything he can be deleted from the Judy and whatnot.
Right.
It's
an old, very classic Yiddish joke. Later. The story is told, you know, that three came to complain before the HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay. One of them is Asher Yotzar. And another one is, let's see, what is the other one? I forget already what number two was. That had to do with falling Kerem. Okay. Number three was the Mamzer. Okay, so I mean, Asher Yotzer came to complain, you know. Bracha says, I mean, you know, I should be under nicer circumstances, not, you know, in connection with bowel movements, urination, and so on. This is pastish, it's not nice. So the Bnei Shalom said, okay, for you, I have something, okay? And that is that when people are going to get married, we're going to have a bracha over there, Asher Yotzer. You know, Asher Yotzer, so I have both Mitzalbo and so on. In that particular case, Asher Yotzer was made happy because there's also a simcha connected with Asher Yotzer, okay? The second one, as I say, for the moment, I've forgotten exactly. Huh? Has something to do with Oledo. I remember, right. Why do people spit in the middle of Oledo? You may not be aware of it, but there were people, right? You know, we say Shaloi, because they prostrate themselves to vanity and emptiness, right? Right, that's the rest of the pasuk, and they prayed to a god who cannot help them. And there was an old custom that when they hit him, talking to the head of a rig, they would spit. This is why I remember when I was a kid, an old-fashioned shniblach, I used to see spittoons on the floor. May have also been because they liked to chew tobacco too in those days. But this was an old business, and you know.
They've eliminated that.
Yeah.
From a lot of
Oh, yes, yes.
Ashkenazi, but not Sephardi.
Right, right. Right. And there is this, well, the among the Ashkenazim, they've reintroduced
them.
Yeah.
They had to.
Yeah.
They were forced to.
Yeah. Yeah, it was part of a lane. Take a look in the art school. You see, they put it in parentheses, okay? So, right. So that's it, you know. And you see, also, right. And the word Rick, you know, which means in this case, you know, like emptiness, nothingness, they bow down to nothingness, right? The word rock in Hebrew is spit. So that between Rick and Rock, you see, there's very little difference. So this, so Olenu came to complain to the Beit Hashlem and said, look, it's such a beautiful prayer, and look what happens. They spit in the middle of my prayer, right? So the Beit Hashlem said, for you too, I have something, right? And that is, comes Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, you see, when they say, people are going to go down on their knees and prostrate themselves and so on. So Olenu was satisfied with that. So the Mamza came to complain to the Beit Hashlem, and the Mamza said, Beit Hashlem, why should I be punished? It wasn't my fault. My parents did something that they should not have done, but why should I be? So the Beit Hashlem said to him, you know, for you too, I have something. Go to America and you can become a shul president. Okay. So, Mamza, right? No, right. We just finished that one. Okay. Yeah. Next one, where they question. Eishes Ger, the Yevid Meshuchro Ba'ayalonis. Okay, so he says, Pshita. Maybe the Ayalonis should not have been included, but all right. At any rate, shouldn't it be obvious that if a woman is married to a proselyte, that she's still a married woman and therefore she should go through the business, right? And the same thing, an Eved Meshuchro, if a slave has been given his freedom, okay.
Legal.
Yeah, it's legal. It depends who may marry, though. But once he's married, he's a married man, and so on, and his wife, therefore, it's the same thing.
Huh?
Okay? So, Mahu de Seymour, I mean, what if you say, Mahu de Seymour, Daber el Bnei Yisrael, that when it says, speak to the children of Israel, this is at the beginning of Parsha Sota in the Torah, okay? Daber b'nei Yisrael, right? Water to heaven, and so on and so forth, right? Speak to the children of Israel, say to them, and says, so if it says, speak to the children of Israel, then we might think, what? Below Gerim, but this does not include
Gerim,
doesn't include proselytes, so Kamashmalon. Therefore, we learn that, nevertheless, they too fall into the same category of, okay, but Amor Hokinami, maybe you'll argue why. So they don't have to be in the same category; they can be separate. No, it says no. I have another entaich. The word after Daber Bnei Yisrael says we Omarta. So why does it say V'omarta? Simply say Daber Bnei Yisrael. Why does it have to add the word V'omarta? So he says V'buyahi, that adds. And so what is it adding? The answer is then that it's adding, the Eishes Ger, Gerim, right, to the same category of being a fully...
The point, within three tefachim from the top of the wall. So according to Rabba, it would be mutter, because we say we view, we look at the top of the walls as the beginning of the tree, as if it were the ground, and therefore one may be mishtamish with this ilan at the first three tefachim from the top of the wall. However, according to Rav Sheshes, we view the beginning of the tree from the ground, even on the sides where the walls are. We can review the beginning of the tree from the ground, and therefore only in the first three tefachim from the ground, they may one be mishtamish with this ilan. And the chiddush of the din of Karen Zaris is that even though over here it's covered from three sides, Rav Sheshe still says it is us. It would only be mutter if it would be covered from all four sides. And according to Rabbah, it is mutter even if it's covered from only two sides, as we find by Anigra. The Gemara says, Ahu dikla dehevel Abaya. Abaya had a tree in his house, growing in his house, vehevesolek bi'ipuma, and it was going out through the skylight. Also, lekamei derav Yosef, he went before Rav Yosef to ask him the question if he is allowed to use the tree to place something on the top of the tree, for instance, at the point on top of the skylight, beyond the skylight, within three tefachim from the skylight. Vishorelei, and he allowed him, Rav Yosef allowed him to do it. Omer Ravacha batachlifa deshorelach kerabashorelach, deshorelach kerabashorelach. That which he allowed you to do it is like the view of Rabbah, that although the tree is beginning to grow very far below that on the ground, since there are the walls of the house, it is mutter to be mishtamish on the ilan on top of the roof, because it is covered by the walls of the house. Says the Gemara Pshita, that's obvious. We just said that Rav Sheshes disagrees with this then. And says the Gemara, Mahu the same, I would have thought afilu the Rav Sheshes, that even according to Rav Sheshes, it should be mutter in this case to use, to be able to use the tree that is beyond, that is higher than the roof of the house. Why? I should say basic commander moledami. We had previously in our Masechta the principle of Bayis commanded moli at the beginning of Perek Haloin, that sometimes we look at a house as if it's filled with objects, as if it's not air there, but it's filled with objects. And therefore, let's look at this whole house as if it will be filled with earth. And therefore, the ground, as far as the top of the tree is concerned, is from the roof of the house. And one should be allowed to be mishtamish to use this tree within three tvachim, which is from the roof. Kamash malon, that the principle of basic commanded mal yadomi does not apply to this din of Mishtamshim Be'ilam. And the Gemara continues, Tanan, we learned in our Mishnah, Sharosh of Gevoyim in Oret Shloisha Tefochim. It says in our Mishnah that if the roots of the tree are three Tefochim high, above the ground, lo yeshef aleihem, one may not sit on these roots. And now the Gemara wants to bring a raya from this Gemara according to Rav Sheshes. Hechadami, how is our Mishnah speaking? Idelei hadre kipi, if the Mishnah is speaking about a simple case where the roots are three tefachim high and they are not hadre kipi, they do not bend over afterwards to below three tefachim, like the case of the machlokes that we had between Rabba and Rav Sheshes. If so, pshita, it is obvious that it is prohibited to sit on these roots, because that is the essence of the Mishnah in Masechtas Beit Sadaf Lamed Vav that we mentioned before. The Mishnah says, "Ein oilen be'ilan," one is not allowed to climb a tree on Shabbos. And it is obvious that just as one is not allowed to climb a tree, one is not allowed to sit on a tree. And what is the definition of a tree? Certainly everyone would understand anything that's three tefachim high is considered a tree. So why is it necessary for our Mishnah to say that then? Elalav, you must say, therefore, that our Mishnah's chiddush is that afogav da hadre kipi, that although the roots afterwards, after they are three tefachim high, they descend and go lower from 10 three tefachim, it is still also because mikoyach isa ka'asi. That would be proof to the view of Rav Sheshes. Says the Gemara, like, no, you have no proof. La'olam delay hadre kipi. I'll tell you, our Mishnah is talking about a case where the roots are above three tefachim and they never go below three tefachim. Our Mishnah is telling us a different chiddush. Afo